at the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do. For the
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside. I don't know about definitive. I think it's just the world's greatest college basketball podcast. In fact, it might be the world's greatest podcast of any type. What do you think, Dan Dockage?
Oh, it's the world's greatest podcast. I mean, plain and simple. Basketball, football, hockey, whatever. Doesn't matter. We cover it all, and we cover it with style, grace, and an intelligence grace. Really seen. Yeah, grace. We have grace.
Grace. When people think of us, I actually do think they think of grace.
They do. If they knew us, they would think of grace.
Grace. You know, no doubt about it. The Cubs tie, graceful.
Yes.
The Cubs hat, graceful.
Currently on.
Junior dropping six dimes yesterday. Ooh. Graceful.
Junior, what is Junior doing? He went 6-0 assist to turnovers in Ohio State's big win. When are we going to start giving Ohio State some love? Kata Bates D up the next Grand Hill.
Oh boy. We just did.
There you go.
We just did. But let me ask you, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff right here. I'm going to ask you a simple question. This is kind of a loaded question because I have an opinion, but let you have your opinion first. If you were playing in a big game, would you want, and coaching in a big game, would you want Teddy Valentine on your game?
Absolutely. Particularly if I was on the road. Particularly if it was a huge game. Because Teddy Valentine is not going to back down to a crowd. He's not going to back down to Coach Almighty on the sideline, putting his hand over his mouth and swearing like a crazy person. He is not going to be intimidated by anything. Give me Teddy ball game, particularly on the road, in a big game, Duke, Indiana, North Carolina, wherever. Give me him every single time. You?
Here's my deal. I 100% agree with you. Now, obviously what Teddy did the other day was typical Teddy. First, he put his hands out when Joel Berry, and look, he missed a call, officials missed a call, who cares? He put his hands out, and then obviously Teddy did a little Teddy thing. He turned around.
I'm not condoning
that. I think that was wrong. I think enough. But here's the deal. First of all, Joel Berry, you don't need to be debating a call. And how about the people that start saying, well, you know, that was Joel Berry. He's an All-American. He's the captain. He's a four-year starter. What does that mean? Who cares? The bottom line is, all right, if I'm at Duke, which I was, if I'm at Carolina, which I was, if I'm at anywhere where it is an adverse environment, home or away, I want that guy on the game because, one, he gets the call right more than anyone, and number two, he really doesn't care. And yet people are losing their minds because he missed a grab of Joel Berry and Joel Berry got upset. Now, this isn't a North Carolina thing. This is just, yeah, he lost his mind. That's going to happen. But you know what? I'd rather have a guy that does that and gets the call right. People say, well, you need respect between the players and the officials. The officials are there to officiate the game. That's it. And if a guy gets the right call, that's all the respect that I need. Your opinion?
My opinion is Teddy Valentine did absolutely nothing wrong. My opinion, I wish more referees and umpires would do what Teddy Valentine did. Nobody wants to talk to an 18 to 22-year-old in any circumstance, much less when he's complaining about something. I don't care if you're an All-American. And I have a lot of respect. I have an 18 to 22-year-old, but I don't want to talk to him about it. I don't want to hear him complaining about anything. I don't want to hear it. So I got on Teddy Valentine for being too aggressive with people, particularly Mick Cronin, late in the day. I love what he did. He turned his back, which basically said from now on, if you're going to come at Teddy Valentine, he may turn his back and embarrass you. I hope more officials do it. More importantly, I hope NBA officials do it because the NBA – well, let's be honest. The NBA is a league full of whiners, moaners, that led by LeBron James, led by the best player that everybody looks at, and it's out of control. Major League Baseball player. I would much rather see an umpire move his fat away from a player than engage him and act like he's something. Players play, umpires ump. If you want to argue, fine, and then the umpire move away. I love what Teddy did. I think basketball in general would be better if referees did not listen, did not pay attention to players. I'm not mad at you for listening to a coach once in a while, but I think that gets overblown with when you're doing Duke and you basically hand a rosary and a plate of cookies to Mike Krzyzewski because, you know, you want to keep him happy. I don't like that. I think referees should do exactly what Teddy Valentine did. Stay the hell away. Turn your back. Do whatever you got to do.
You see, here's the deal. People understand. If Teddy then gets in a conversation with Joe Berry, what is Leonard Hamilton going to do in that situation? He's going to lose his mind. It's a key point in a game. Wait a second. You're going to have a conversation with him. You probably won't even have a conversation with me. So, to me, to put it to rest, if there's a big game, I would say a large majority of the coaches in America would want a guy who's done a zillion Final Fours and is going to get the call right and is not impacted by all the static around that game, whether it's a star player or a Hall of Fame coach. Are we agreed?
Absolutely. 1,000%. Everybody wants a guy. I mean, look, I don't necessarily want him at home because I want a referee that I can manipulate a little bit, but he and Terry Weimer aren't that guy.
No, I agree with that. All right, here's the other one. I'm going to tell you that, in my opinion right now, there are three teams that have the potential to be great in college basketball. All right?
Yep.
Michigan State.
Oh, yeah.
Duke and Arizona. What are your thoughts?
I don't disagree with that at all. I would put Villanova in there, although, you know, Butler handled him. But I watched Arizona last night. My God. You go,
good, aren't they?
Oh, my God. I mean, the two big kids, you know, Ayton, look, I don't know. The NBA is going a different direction, but I want him on my team if he's a real guy. I don't want him on my team if he's Joel Embiid. I want him if he's a real guy, a real killer, not a you know, Miles Turner, Joel Embiid, fluff guy. I want him if he's a real guy. And the other kid, you know, Krystic hasn't played great, but, man, they got everything you need. Duke's got everything you need. Who was the third one you said?
Michigan State.
They're at another level right now.
I'll tell you what. Jaren Jackson is going to leave college in a year, obviously, as one of the best defenders in college basketball. He can guard a ball screen. He challenges shots. He challenges shots on his man. He challenges shots away from the basketball. He rebounds it. They run that pick and slip stuff to him. He jumps up and knocks down threes like it's layups. They're taking better care of the basketball. They've got enough depth. I don't, you know, like people say, there's no change when they go to the, I think there's a change when they go to the bench. I think if they lose Jackson, there's a significant change. I think that McQuaid can guard, but he's got to, every once in a while, he's got to be a little more assertive. Kenny Goins is playing out of his mind, it seems, making open shots. And, you know, Tom Tong gives him great leadership. To me, what they did to Michigan, to Maryland in about a 8 to 10 minute period was overwhelming yesterday. You agree?
Best performance I've seen for a stretch. Just dominating, athletic, Cassius Winston. I mean, my God, I was talking to Dane Fife 2 days ago, and he's like, look, I knew Cassius Winston can shoot, and we knew he could pass. But his ability to make others better has been great. And you look at Langford. Langford's coming in. I just think they're
really playing well.
Yeah. I think they're the best playing team in the country. You think about all the bigs they got, big, strong, Schilling's back, Ben Carter. I mean, they just have guys. Here's my issue. Jaren Jackson is a really nice kid. And he made some threes yesterday. His difference is around the basket. His difference is when he's in the game, Michigan State's an elite defensive team. Miles Bridges is a really nice kid. I just wonder when they face somebody, you know, let's say second round of the NCAA tournament, like a Texas Tech, who has junkyard dogs that are going to try to bite your face off. That kind of team. But right now, I don't think anybody's playing better.
Well, you mentioned Texas Tech. You know, we all watch Texas Tech going up the fog and, you know, to me, just kind of wear out Kansas. I mean, I just thought they wore them out. They were better than Kansas to me. They were tougher than Kansas.
Right.
They were more physical. They were more athletic. They had the best guard on the court in Keenan Evans. Jarrett Culver, that freshman, is going to be really good, as is the kid Smith. They're front court guys. They have tremendous depth. When I watch Texas Tech, I watch a team that looks like a better offensive version and maybe more athletic and more talented, playing a little bit differently, but they look a lot like a West Virginia team with better players, maybe. How's that one?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great comparison. You know what? I'm watching, and there are certain guys, and I'll give you two. Chris Beard at Texas Tech and Brad Underwood at Illinois. Now, I'm watching Illinois, and I'm watching Texas Tech, and, you know, you're watching teams all over the country, and I watch both of those teams, and I think, man, nobody in the country can name anybody on their team. Nobody. Like, and in Illinois' case, they're not good enough yet, but they get guys to play so freaking hard. They get guys that, you know, everybody says, well, if you play a bunch of defenses, then you don't have one that's any good and all that happy horse bleep. Well, the truth of the matter is, Chris Beard, I don't care what defense they want to play, they're going to guard the living heck out of you. I don't care what defense you get Brad Underwood playing at Illinois, they're going to guard the heck out of you. Two junior college guys that know how to coach. They get out in transition. They run like crazy. They run every possession. They don't jog. They run. They sprint. And I know that Brad Underwood is eventually going to get this whole thing at Illinois in a really good spot. And I think Chris Beard already has. I think Chris Beard's got a chance to win the league.
I agree. I'm blown away by Chris Beard's team, to be honest with you. Their front court athleticism.
Yeah.
Keenan Evans is as good as any. And the Big 12's got great point guards. I mean, obviously, they got Trey Young. They got Javon Carter. They got Graham. They've got Keenan Evans. I mean, you look at Manu LeConte. I mean, you go right up and down that conference, you've got really good point guards. Keenan Evans, to me, let's eliminate Trey Young from the equation because he's like doing crazy stuff.
Another world.
He's the next best player in that league. Maybe.
I agree with that. Let me think about that just a second. Yeah, you're probably right. I mean,
Kendrick Williams at TCU. You got Javon Carter at West Virginia. Both really good.
Yeah, I think he's played
Graham
the best.
At Kansas, you can't take anything away from him. But, I mean, that team has a toughness about him. Like, I look at Arizona State, and Arizona State, obviously, if they're not shooting threes, they're going to struggle. They're not as good defensively, although I think they're competitive. And I think that trip, like, the mountain back-to-back in the Pac-12 might be the toughest. When you got to go to Colorado and Utah, that road trip, all right, to me, is one of the toughest in college basketball. And I like Arizona State, and I think those guards are phenomenal. But I'm not sure they're ever going to be good enough to win six games or to win four games and get to a Final Four. As crazy as it sounds, in the right situation, I could see Texas Tech winning four games and getting to a Final Four.
Oh, I could too. I go back to they just play hard. They play both ends. They play all three ways. They run like crazy in transition. They defend in transition. I think they play hard defensively, and I think offensively, you mentioned it, point guard through, they are really talented. And again, just guys, I bet you the average fan can't name one player on Texas Tech, but they might be, you know, you think about what they've done to people. They go into Kansas and win. They beat Northwestern before we may have known Northwestern maybe was a bit of a fraud this year. I just like everything about it, and it's not like, you know, Chris Beard doesn't have a pedigree. He's already been in a tournament. He's already won games. So, I mean, what the heck? What are you going to do? I mean, it's set up for them, in my opinion. I don't – like, the league is really good, and Trey Young is ridiculous, and his teammates are pretty good too. And so I'm really interested in seeing, you know, how this whole thing plays out because we've said before, hey, Kansas isn't going to win. They lost this home game, and then they end up winning. So
I'm taking the field. I said it right from the beginning. I got the field. My guy Jay Wills got Kansas. And look – That's great. Now we got there's a big game this weekend, a little West Virginia, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And you said something I don't think we talk about enough. Trey Young is phenomenal. He's ridiculous what he does. I mean, but he has a good team. Brady Manek is the perfect four to play with him because when he comes off those ball screens, if you try to take it out of Trey Young's hands, they slick it back to him. He knocks down shots. Christian James is shooting at a high clip, over 40% from the three. Cameron McGusty is playing better right now. Kadeem Latin gets three offensive rebounds a game because he plays off of that penetration and behind the defense. And McNeese is like a pogo stick. It's ridiculous. So they're more to, like, this is a Oklahoma team that's a lot more than just Trey Young. It's actually a team that's put together and the pieces fit. Now they're playing a West Virginia team that's still undermanned because they don't have Issa Mott. In Morgantown, I think we both agree, trap Trey Young, deny him the ball back, screen the crap out of him, make him defend. What's your take on that game in Morgantown? That will be a wild environment. We should be there this week for game day because that will be an insane environment. But there's a little thing called Monday called the National Football Championship game. Obviously, I don't think we're going to be there.
Well, I think you should. To me, this is a real test for Trae Young. You know, but he's had a ton of tests. I mean, you know, when you shoot the ball deep, I don't care who you are, you're going to have a night where you're 2 for 14 because he shoots them deep. You know, I'm talking about threes. I'm talking about, yeah. Doesn't mean he's not going to score 25. I think the key in this game, and the key for Trae Young is going to be in games like this where it's loaded, it's packed, that guy's going to be shooting off that musket and, you know, it's going to be crazy.
I hated that musket.
That's why I left West Virginia. That's why after 6 days I said to hell with it, I'm going back to Bowling Green because of the musket.
Especially when he came right behind your timeout.
Ah, jeez.
And once he shot that behind your timeout, you knew you weren't winning that game.
I do think that that's pretty cool, though, that they do that. But I'm surprised the PC crowd hasn't lost their mind. You're promoting shooting inside. I can only imagine. But anyway, look, he's got to be efficient in this game. Now, he can go out otherworldly. You know, it wouldn't surprise me to see him go 8 for 8 in the first half from three and score 35 points. Hell, I saw him score 25 and get 10 assists in the first half against Northwestern. So I could see, you know, whatever he does, I can see. But I do think that if it is not going perfectly for him, he must make sure that he's efficient in this game and get others involved. And others got to step up. You mentioned Manning. It's a big game for him. I mean, he's a freshman playing in this environment. So I think it's going to be, as you said, the game of the week. I should be on it. You should be there in game day, and the world would be a happy place.
It is a all-grown man game.
Yeah, that's why we should be there, you and me.
That actually should be, you know, coaches, that thing we did at the bench. You would, Hugs, because I had such a good relationship with Hugs in Germany when I had to ask him that question when Texas A&M went on like a 20-0 run, and I have to come out of the timeout and ask him a question. That was really a real
well, crazy. You know what? Coach Almighty going Coach Almighty. What are you going to do?
It's one of those things. Now, here's another question for you. Just kind of, you know, kind of a big picture question. FBI investigation, we haven't heard anything. We're going to cover this every week because you know what? We're not going to hear anything because we're not going to hear anything until they have something to say because this is how that works. But USC's taking a tumble. No doubt about it, right? They're struggling a little bit. Arizona has rebounded and through all the chaos. Miami's taking a tumble. And how about our guy we're going to speak to in a little while now? I mean, just before he gets on, my guy Bruce Pearl loses Austin Wiley and he loses Daniel Purifoy. And yet it seems like they're better. How much of a distraction, and we're going to ask Bruce this, do you think that FBI investigation is? Or is it a cause that you can wrap your team around and get everyone pulling in the same direction?
Or is it neither? Or is it just like, you know, I mean, kids don't care. I mean, look, if I'm not being investigated and I'm a player or I'm a guy, I don't care. I don't think it has to be either. And we'll ask Bruce, but I just think that at this point, what happened 3 days ago isn't really on the radar of anybody but the national media. You know, I mean, everybody else is like, who cares? I would be surprised if maybe Bruce will say it's a cause. I don't know, but I can't imagine. I mean, I just would think it's, hey, this is where it is, and away we go. That's what I would think. I mean, we're going to bring it up every day. Hey, this is our cause. The FBI's after us. I mean, you're not, you know, the Luciano family.
No, that's a good point. You know, we'll be able to ask Perlmutter that question, you know, our former
colleague.
I love when people say that. Former colleague.
You know what I was telling? I was telling Molly McGrath, like everybody that works with us on Tuesday nights, it's like here I sit, me and Bart Fox. You know, Sam Ponder is off doing NFL Today, Allison Williams, and you know, Molly McGrath will be the next star. And all the while on Tuesday nights on our show, me and the producer, Bart Fox, we drive in the cold and we do games.
That's what you do. We send
people off.
All right, so you do games. I have one team in your conference. Yes. Not that's your conference. That
is
absolutely perplexing to me. I came into this season thinking that Iowa, perplexing.
Yeah.
I came into the season thinking Iowa was going to be an NCAA tournament team and a team that could win some games in the NCAA tournament. Why was I so wrong?
Because they can't shoot. They cannot shoot. They absolutely cannot shoot. I'm watching them last night, Junior in Ohio State, you know, had him basically all night, and they just, if they, you know, Bohannon can shoot, but Hick, he couldn't get away from Junior last night. He had a couple of pull-ups, but they just cannot shoot the basketball, and they don't have enough insight, particularly when Tyler Cook, who I think is really good.
I think he's really good.
Yeah, but he can't shoot, you know, but when he gets in foul trouble, which he did last night, it's a real problem because I'm telling you, they cannot shoot the basketball at all. Now, they had a kid, Moss, make a couple, but every game that I've watched, and I've watched probably all of them in the Big Ten, I got to look at it, it's like, all right, if you can just keep scoring a little bit, eventually they'll go through a stretch where they can't score for 5 minutes, and you'll be able to take a four-point lead and make it 15. And that's what's happening to them. Seth just can't shoot the basketball. Got to shoot. Do you know that? This day and age, so, it's a different world.
Yeah. Oh, it's like when people look at pros and say, you know, this guy's going to be a good pro. This guy's going to be a good pro. If
can
you
shoot?
Can't make shots,
right,
you cannot be a great pro. It's
right.
Just the way it is. If you're not a shot maker, I don't want to hear that you're a lottery pick.
Here's what people say. He plays like Rodman. Well, in the history of basketball, there's really only been one Rodman. But he can't shoot, but he plays like Rodman. Oh, okay. All right, well, the G League is full of guys that can't shoot but play like Rodman.
And what's the one story? I mean, what the biggest story in college basketball isn't Marvin Bagley, and it isn't DeAndre Ayton, and it's not even the FBI thing. It's Trae Young. Why?
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because the dude makes a lot. Because the dude makes a lot of buckets.
He just he makes them from everywhere, and he does it late. He does.
How about his runners?
He's so good. You know what? He is the guy that every shot. I said this when I did their game against Oregon, and he dropped 40. And I know it's a popular narrative, but I do believe this. I just say he's Steph Curry. If you're looking for the next Steph Curry, there he is. Now, hang on, though, Double D. Okay, I will. He's got to.
I like when you ask yourself the question.
He's got to be able to. Like, the pros a different deal now. Steph's doing it in the pros, and I know he's better than what Steph was in college. But Steph's been doing them in the pros. But as a college player, this guy is better than Steph Curry in the same mold as Steph Curry, but does better than what Steph did. Would you agree with that?
In this moment in time, I mean, Steph did it at Davidson as a freshman against the Southern Conference. This dude's doing it. Against some of the best teams in the country. I love the kid's answer when people ask him about the Steph Curry comparison. He says, I'm just trying to be the best Trae Young I can be. I mean, like, the kid understands that you can see his release and how quick it is and where he releases it from. You can see some of the runners and how he plays. Look, everyone plays like someone. That's my big thing. Like, it's like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the kid from Kentucky. Vern Fleming, just the way it is. It's Vern Fleming. So let's not have a conversation. Trae Young right now, he, if you look at him and then, look, Steph Curry's the focal point of every sports center, every game, no matter what. This dude plays like Steph Curry. He looks like him. He plays like him. He shoots from a distance. His release is like him. He's on a team that plays fast and freed up and plays with good spacing. So it's an easy comparison. But again, I agree with you. He's doing it at a very high level in college. There's always a transition. But you know what we're going to have a transition to?
Tell me.
When we come back, our former colleague, the one and only, the man who never saw a microphone he didn't like, the man when he opens up his refrigerator door and the light goes on, he starts talking. We'll have a visit from Bruce Pearl.
I love sports. I just wish they could be with me always. They say you don't choose the app. The app chooses you. It is everything I could ever want in a sports companion. It can stream the games and shows that I love, and it's there whenever I need it. I never thought I could find an app that loves sports as much as I do. Until now.
Download the ESPN app to stream ESPN Radio and all the ESPN networks now.
We'd like to welcome in our former colleague and the head basketball coach at maybe one of the hottest teams in all of college basketball, a guy who I just introduced. I said, when he opens up the refrigerator door and the light goes on, the guy starts talking. And you know what? His team is listening. And that is the one and only Bruce Pearl. Hey, Bruce, this has got to be obviously a different season for you. And, you know, we got to ask, I mean, with everything that went on in the preseason and all the static that went on around the program, how have you been able to keep your team locked in and focused, you know, with everything that's gone on?
Well, first of all, great to be with you guys. I miss you guys and appreciate you all very much. Believe about half of what you read and about a quarter of what you hear. All right. So there's been a lot of smoke and a lot of noise. We're getting through the process. And but the question is, how do you keep these kids focused? They're kids. What's important to them? This year's team right now. And so we've got 9 guys on scholarship that are playing really hard, playing really well together. And more than anything else, they trust one another. And they rely on one another. And so when you work at that at both ends of the floor, you value possessions, and the kids are playing hard. And as a result, we kind of putting that all together, and we've had some success.
This team reminds me of your Tennessee teams in that they're undersized. They have a little bit of a chip. They draw a line in the sand. That's a great cliche. I know Dockage will kill me on that one.
Oh, cliches.
Yeah, really. But, I mean, is this the team at Auburn that you've had is the closest to your teams at Tennessee?
Yeah, they are. And two things on that. One, my son Stephen Pearl, when he got into the coaching aspect of things with our program, he said, you know, Dad, our Auburn teams, we've improved the athleticism, but we don't look anything like Tennessee because we're not tough enough. And we started to recruit a little bit that way, coach a little bit harder that way to get that edge back, and that's happened. And the second thing is, because I'm talking to 2 coaches, you guys will understand this more than anybody else. For the first time since I've been at Auburn, I've got 5 guys back from a year ago. Actually 7, but Austin and Danielle aren't eligible yet. This is the first time I've had any returns. So, you know, last year we didn't end possessions with a rebound. Or last year when we lost games because we didn't shoot well from the foul line, or because we didn't get back in transition, you get carryover to the next season, and that's how you build a program. Every other year, it's been a complete rebuild because of the roster, and now finally, I don't have any seniors on this club, and so we're enjoying the benefits of all that we have learned from the year before. You can't simply do it each year with new kids.
Hey, Bruce, you mentioned, just so people understand, hey, we're going to recruit toughness. What are you looking for? You go recruit a kid. What shows you that there's a fine line between toughness and crazy. So
right.
How do you go about it? What are you looking for?
Well, the first thing is someone that's not defined by their offense in the sense that, you know, in order for him to be successful, he has to score. He has to have the ball. He has to get his shots. Well, if that's the case, then sometimes, you know, I'm looking for other things. You know what? We're winning because he's on the floor. He's happy to rebound. He's happy to set screens. He's going to guard his yard, and he's not going to get punked. And sometimes we confuse toughness with, like, for example, aggression. I've got a freshman, two freshmen, Davion Mitchell and Chuma Kiki. They are not openly aggressive kids, either in their manner, their body language, but they're both tough. And they're quietly tough. And then I've got other guys that, you know, you look at them playing hard. They play like the Tasmanian Devil. They play like I coach. And you think that's toughness. Sure, that could be toughness too. But sometimes it can be quiet. And that's, you know, that's something that is not common with freshmen.
Bruce, the other thing, you know, you mentioned you've got guys back. And, you know, Izzo and everybody talks about this. How much is your team now more player-run? And how much have they taken the burden off you and your staff?
That's a great question. You know, I think it's when the Patriots are most successful, it's when Brady goes to the line, he reads the defense, and he checks off, and he runs his play. And so what I've done with my point guards, both Jared Harper, who is quietly one of the most underrated point guards in the country, and we bring those guys into the scouting report. Look, this is what I think is going to be good against this team on this night. And so, therefore, I arm him with my knowledge, and then I try and let him call the game a little bit more. And if he's calling the game a little bit more, then he's understanding all 5 positions, including his own. And as a result, I think he's been a better facilitator and playmaker. And then I think the second thing is this. You know, when when you trust each other, look, guys know when they're staying within the framework of what they do and when they don't. And when players themselves hold each other accountable, go, look, that's not your strength. You know, and sometimes not even to say it, they know it. And that's what happens to teams that really are hard to guard, because guys aren't trying to do things they know they can't do because they're not willing to do that when their teammates are going to hold them accountable.
So about a month ago, it's been more than a month ago, there was speculation, and we got to ask this question. I know you can answer it any way you want, but I don't want to be a fraud, because Ben Dalkich will call me a fraud, and I hate when he does that. then we won't be the world's greatest podcast. We'll just be like just another podcast. We want to be the world's greatest podcast. But whatever it was, people say, Bruce Pearl, all these gurus, I call them gurus, and then they're all going to be mad at me because I call them gurus, but They all said that, Bruce Pearl, he's done. He's not going to make it through the end of the week. What do you say to those people when they do that?
Well, look, they've got a job to do, and I understand that. Sometimes things get said, and they're not completely informed, and so sometimes you've got to be, mindful of that. I think the fact that we are still here and the fact that the kids that we have on the floor are still here tells you that we've gone through a pretty exhaustive process at looking at some things in our program. Everybody around the country did. But because ours was very, very public and involved in the federal court system, we had to dig a lot deeper. And so, therefore, there's a lot more noise coming out. And the fact that we are still here tells you that, well, you know what? We must have passed some really pretty good tests and some pretty good examinations. And I feel really good about. Look, I'm very upset about some of the things that very well may have been done on my watch, and I'm responsible for that, and I'm accountable for that. And we don't know where that's going to end at some point, but I do believe that there's no way I would still be here if there was some answers to some questions and some real hard digging haven't found out that. We run a very clean program. We've tried to do things the right way. And, yes, we're going to be responsible for the mistakes that we've made. We got two players, two terrific players, two great kids who have not been declared to be eligible to play. Now, they're still in practice. They're still in school. They're making progress to degrees, and they're staying ready. But because we've messed some things up, and they've messed some things up, their eligibility is being withheld right now. And so we got to own that. But at this point, that's kind of where we are. And as a result, I think we're definitely working our way through the process.
I'm happy we've done that. Now we can go back to basketball. SEC, you've coached it a long time. Is this the best SEC you've ever coached in?
Yeah, because top to bottom, it's who's the worst team in the league? I mean, who are the bottom three or four teams in the league? Forget about the top. I mean, forget about whether it be Kentucky or Texas A&M or Florida or Arkansas or Tennessee. Forget about that. Put your name on the who's going to finish 14th or 13th or 12th. Good luck with that. And that's what I really think has made this conference night in and night out. It's going to be a grind. I think the team that wins this league could be 14-4, 13-5. That's a lot of losses in conference. And so, it'll be about matchups. It'll be about, guys not getting too high, guys not getting too low. And I do think that there could be 7 or 8 teams out of the SEC that are worthy of making it to the postseason.
Hey, Bruce, around here, Indianapolis football, it's like, hey, are they, the Colts, good enough to beat the Patriots? That's like the whole focus. When I talk to the GM privately, assistant GM, that's what they talk about. Do you look at Kentucky that way? Does everybody in the SEC look at Kentucky that way? You got players enough to beat? Are we playing hard enough to beat? Can we beat Kentucky? Is it all about that?
Yeah. Dan, I think because Kentucky has got so many talented young players, in some years, yes, in some years, no. I don't think this is that year. Kentucky is good enough to win our league. They're talented enough to win our league. They're deep enough to win our league. And John knows how to do it. But it's not going to be Kentucky and everybody else this year. It's there are three or four teams, that Texas A&M gets their guys back. If Florida, they can't wait for Budenu to come back. But when he does come back, holy cow, they're going to be a different team. Arkansas has got seven seniors. I mean, they got seven seniors. They're the only team to beat Oklahoma. They beat Minnesota. But one of the things I do think you do is you look at you build your roster and you build a program to try to beat the best teams on your schedule.
Right.
Like, in other words, don't press if pressing isn't going to beat the best teams on your schedule. Because pressing just beats everybody you're supposed to beat. And then all of a sudden you get in the game and you're running that way. So build a system get personnel that is good enough to beat the best teams on your schedule. And I think that everybody does that. But it's not just about Kentucky and the SEC anymore.
You know, it's funny. It really is. It's funny you say that about pressing. That was going back to the 80s. Coach Knight always said, look, we're not good enough to press. We can't beat North Carolina if we press. So that philosophy is time-honored. Let's put it that way, that what you just talked about. And it's smart. That's why you've been successful.
One of the things about pressure, though, and Seth would, you know, if Seth got back into the game and started coaching, and whether or not he brought back his 1-3-1 or, you know, Seth would mix in pressure. The inability to trap right now. I mean, look at Arkansas.
Right.
Arkansas is 40 minutes of hell. They can't press anymore because right now the way the rule game's being called, all that contact out of the way on a perimeter. But you're right, because when Coach Knight was going up against Carolina, you know, you can't get beat in transition against Carolina. You press Carolina, you give them transition. We can't, you know, if that's the team we got to beat to win the national championship, then why do it? And so I hear you.
100%. I mean, everything I did when I was at Virginia Tech was, all right, how can we play to give us a chance to play against Duke and North Carolina? That was the whole focus. We, you know, we had to muck it up. We had to be physical. We had to knock guys off cuts. We had to take away transition, not turn the basketball over, try to compete on the glass and have a chance at the end. And, you know, look, if their X's are bigger than your O's, you know, the faster the game gets and the more possessions, good chance that those dudes are going to whoop your tail. But, Brucey, it is great to have you on with the world, us on the world's greatest podcast. It just became better. It might be the world. What's better than the world's greatest podcast?
Nothing.
Is it getting any bigger than that?
I only had to get to
13-1 yes. to get on it. I mean, you got to earn your way on.
Well, it's not
right,
easy.
Buddy.
It's not easy to get on this
you
podcast.
Did right? Hey, I only had to get fired from two jobs to get on this damn thing. So you're darn right. You doesn't walk out here, pal.
I mean, you know, we don't just let anyone roll into the world's greatest podcast. I mean, Danny Hurley had to be number one. Bobby Hurley had to be number one in the country to do it.
I hope we get a chance to do it again.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys, our first question of the day comes from Chris. He's wondering what kind of a job is Syracuse when Jim Boeheim leaves.
Go ahead, B-squared.
Unless they hire the absolute right person, and I'm not exactly sure who that is, I just think this is going to be one of, like, Indiana, you're right there. Syracuse, there's good players around. But, man, I just think this is going to be a monster replacement because what Jim Boeheim has done in that place, making it a national program, again, 28,000 people are used to being in there. Bad parking, bad snow. They still come. I don't know if you can sustain. That'll be interesting.
So I'm going to disagree with you. I think good. That because of the league right now, because of the history, because of the banners, because of the facility, the practice facility, because of all the other things that surround Syracuse basketball and the tradition, because you have tradition to me is the equalizer. It's hard. I think that right now Syracuse is a hard job in the ACC no matter what, but I think you can sustain being successful and competitive. And if you're competitive in the ACC, you're going to be competitive nationally.
All right, our second question comes from Connor Edwards. What do you guys think of Clemson's fast start at 13-1?
I'm just high on Clemson. I think that Brad Brunell's got his culture back. I think last year, I think that in a lot of ways, you know, with Lawson Game coming back, and take this the right way, the program wasn't being held hostage. But, I mean, I think that the focal point and the culture of the program changed from what makes Brad Brunell so good. They're passing the ball better. They got senior upper-class guards. I like their front court players. Elijah Thomas runs, jumps, blocks, finishes around the basket. Dante Grantham has been more consistent. And I think Brad Brunell is very comfortable coaching this team.
I believe in him. Now, you know, the league is tough. You get a guy injured or you lose a tough game, you can, you know, it can go away quick. But as I sit here right now in the world's greatest podcast, I'll take Clemson all day long. Seth, let me ask you a question. You ready?
Oh, wait a second. Gabe, you've been replaced.
Yes. Who has a more – this from – fancy this. At Tall Snow, a Hawkeye who got his ass kicked last night by Andrew Dockage in Badgerland – So this guy is a little bit bitter, a taste bitter. He asked, Seth, who has a more punchable face, Grayson Allen or Andrew Dockage?
And I would answer that by saying those are probably two of my favorite players in college basketball. Grayson Allen making shots. You know, again, last year I had strong opinions on him because I think what he did was wrong. But my man, Andrew Dockage yesterday went 6 assists, no turnovers. Six assists, no turnovers. So in essence, what he did, if this gentleman is an Iowa fan, he punched Iowa in the face.
Nice.
So it was the reversal face punch. So, I mean, personally, I don't think anyone should be punched in the face for playing basketball or competing. And if you don't like a player, you don't have to like him, but punching in the face is probably a little extreme. Can we all just get along and respect what each other brings to this earth? I just don't get it.
Nah, I think I get what he's saying. You know, look, he's my son. And, you know, I went from when he was a kid just saying, hey, look, nose in the corner. Just nose in the corner. I don't want to deal with you. Put your nose in the corner, and I'll be back in 5 minutes. To saying, give me the car keys. To saying, you know, once I got divorced and his mother lived, you know, a few blocks away, just walk to your mother's house. Just stay with her. You know what I mean? So punching I'm not really big on. But here's what I like, Seth. I like that Andrew Dockage is mentioned with Grayson Allen, number one. And I like that Andrew Dockage incurred the wrath of an Iowa fan, which I like. Because, you know, when you're a walk-on, you're sitting at the end of the bench, no one's mad at you because they don't know you. So I say the most punchable face in this entire deal, Seth, I really believe this. If you're going to go and rank them, the most punchable is the guy Tall Snow, the Iowa fan living in Wisconsin, because, I don't know, if you're going to ask a question like that, I think you deserve to be punched. There you go.
There you go. Nose in the corner
nose
to
the
go
corner.
Walk to your mom's house.
Well, look, I know you're staying with me, but walk your little butt to your mother's house. No car, no nothing. Whatever she does with you, she does. And if you decide to run away, we'll see you in 20 years when we go to the circus.
You don't get that anywhere else. And you can find us wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe in the ESPN app or leave us a rating in Apple Podcasts.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN.